do the presentation and then allow for maximum opportunity for members of the committee to pose questions, and we're all here to then respond to those questions at when your answer is ready.
Yes, Honorable Deputy Minister, when I was just reading the names, I was just confirming the delegation as we were informed. But it will be very important that all of us, we know who is doing what, especially from the other entities as well, who are not engaging every day with everybody. If it is possible for that introduction, especially even in terms of responsibilities, I think it will assist us quite a lot. Thank you very much.
Well, I suggest that each of the DDGs could introduce themselves, and perhaps my job would be to introduce Mr. Holmley, who is the newest addition to the team. He was appointed as the permanent Chief Financial Officer on the 1st of September, my group. And then, of course, we've got DDG Learning Academy, is also new, but let me leave it to everybody, including Bob Gordon, to just introduce themselves. The members can see who we're talking about as they speak.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Gordon Holliday. I'm the new Chief Financial Officer. I start on the 1st of September, but I know I'm the brand new.
Thanks, next.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Nkili Mohoboko. You were right in the pronunciation. And I'm responsible for learning and development, training particularly. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson. My name is Maishava Chueta. I'm the spokesperson to the Minister of Home Affairs.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson. My name is John Carlson, Chief Director responsible for Planning, Reporting and Policy.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. My name is Alva Williamson. I'm responsible for Human Resources in the Department. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Jackie McKay. I'm responsible for Immigration in the Department of Home Affairs.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Musa Kize, Deputy Director General responsible for Safe Services.
Honourable Members and Chair, my name is Tulane Mabuso. I'm the Chief Operations Officer in the Department of Home Affairs.
I think we are done except the DG whom everybody knows, and Riyadh we know, I think that must do so, and I think we come. Okay, we just make that introduction so that we are seen. Yeah.
Good morning, almost afternoon. My name is Andre Gaon. I am responsible for parliamentary liaison work in the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Riyaz Musa. I'm the Deputy Director of the Department of Home Affairs, providing parliamentary support.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Tandy Moyo. I'm the Special Advisor to the Minister of Home Affairs.
Yeah. We actually missed the time. Now, thanks for having filled in that. I think I did not see it on the list. And then one more.
Chair, I'm not sure whether I have to repeat it. My name is Solomon Maduana, Parliamentary Liaison Officer
Thank you, Chair. My name is Arthur Paul Fraser, a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Chair. I need to say, member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Tanya Mekeye, member of this committee. Thank you. San Bonadi, you know how I am the CEO of the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Don Gunyente, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I'm sure the researcher we know, and he is the one that has been speaking to all of you as a committee secretary, assisted by Unandi on the left, who has made all the logistics for all of us. Can we then on that score go to the DG and take us through as mandated by the Deputy Minister? Can you continue?
So thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. I will be making the presentation on the annual report. And Chair, I must say that the presentation may not cover everything which is in the annual report as it is documented. However, we can respond on any question which is coming out of the annual report. Chair, I'm going to take time in terms of what is the vision and the mission of the department will be presented to the committee. And that now as a department we contribute into these three outcomes out of the 13, but there was one which is added, that all people in South Africa are and feel safe, the second government focus on economic growth, and the efficient, effective and development oriented public service, and the one which has been added, nation building and social cohesion. Chair, as we know that there is a national development plan, so as a department, our major focus on the NDP is to confront the triple challenge of poverty, inequality, and unemployment by achieving higher growth rates. A part of DHA is to facilitate the acquisition of critical skills needed for economic growth and to build our own skills base. NDP draws on international experience in appointing out a strategy to succeed if it is led by a capable state, staffed by professionals, where trust is engaged by social stability, improved services and reduced corruption, and the mass of citizens feel part of the plan and economic development. In this regard, DHA could play a key role in enabling regional development by working with certain countries to establish efficient, secure, and managed movement of people. The inclusion of all citizens in democracy and development is enabled by providing them with the status and identity that gives them access to rights and services. The modernization program of DHA can therefore reduce frauds and the cost of doing business by enabling e-government thus attracting more investment. Honorable Chair, in the previous administration, the minister signed a performance agreement with the president with regard to home affairs. It was for the completion of all strategic information and identification projects within already defined budgets and time frames, was effective and efficient refugee management strategies and systems, contributing to the level of skills and general economic development in South Africa, targets by realizing a positive skill migration share of around 50,000 migrants annually. The focus will be on critical skills shortages, supportive of the medium-term strategies and government outcomes.
I think honorable members in the gallery, I wish to recognize the presence of the honorable speaker of the Gujarat Legislative Assembly, Sri Mangubai Patel, who is presently visiting Cape Town. The honorable speaker is also accompanied by the Consul General of India in Cape Town, Mr. Puneet Kanda. The honorable speaker is presently conducting a courtesy visit through the houses of parliament. Honorable speaker, this is the connected and important. You are most welcome. Thank you very much. You may proceed to the decision.
Thanks very much, Chair. And then the resolution of every child birth within 30 days of delivery, the issue of identity documents to every South African 15 years and above, improving the turnaround times for all services, children times and unit cost per service, determining and improving the maximum distance for citizens to travel to access home affairs services. Based on that, a chairman to come up with our outcomes in order for us to make sure that we achieve what has been given to us. The outcome one was a choice of African citizenship and identity. Outcome two, immigration managed effectively and securely in the national interest, including economic, social and cultural development, a service that is efficient, accessible and quality. In that regard, we have to come up with strategic objectives per each one. So our first strategic objective is to ensure that registration at birth is the only entry point for South Africans in the national population to register. To issue identity documents to citizens 10 or 15 years of age and above, to ensure the identification and registration of all South African citizens and foreign nationals to enhance the integrity and security of identity. To ensure a secure, responsive, and flexible immigration regime in support of national security, priorities and interests. To implement effective and efficient asylum seeker refugee management strategies and systems. To facilitate the efficient movement of bona fide travelers to support national interests and priorities, and to prevent and prohibit the movement of undesirable persons in the interest of national security. To contribute towards realizing the priorities is migration trends of around 50,000 migrants annually. To transform the culture of the organization in support of securing identity, citizenship, and international migration. And to ensure ethical conduct and a zero tolerance approach to corruption. And to obtain a clean audit report as we are aware that we are using taxpayers' money. To ensure effective, efficient, and accessible service delivery to clients. Then, Chair, I want us to move what has been over these systematic challenges which we have been facing as a department. Yes, we still have outdated systems that are not integrated, which may compromise at times the security and the service delivery which we want to achieve. We still have the challenge of a staff complement that does not have sufficient specialists, for instance, if I talk on the IT environment and even within the finance, which is not professional, so it's something which is still a challenge in the department. Highly uneven quality of infrastructure with large dependency on DPWS still rented accommodation. And even quality of administration and governance processes. Yes, Home Affairs is spread across the country, so it's something which we still need to work on, which creates risks and compromises the effective management of people and resources. Constant risks and threats to civil registration compared to those identity and immigration systems from local and transnational crime syndicates. Yes, there are still areas where police and legislation still need some review and updating. Immigration capacity, we are still having a challenge that in South Africa we have about 700 immigration officials, whereas UK, London as a city, is already getting about 2,500, which poses certain challenges and systems that are not aligned with strategic reserve-based approach. So those are the challenges which we are aware of as a department which we are working on. So we have to look at how we would try to take the department from the state it was and try and move it going forward. We said, effective management of immigration to contribute to security and development is one of the strategies. And establishing a comprehensive and a secure national identity improving service delivery and promote good governance and administration, developing officials that are ethical, patriotic, and professional,
and we have to have a visible
and firm action in the fight against corruption, because the services of Home Affairs cannot be led by one anywhere, but we need to make sure that the citizens are able to access that without corruption. Let's just highlight what has been the highlights for the department over the last administration. So I'll come back to the 2013-14. All 2010 FIFA World Cup guarantees were delivered at high standard. National Population Recession Campaign mobilized officials, communities, and the public to record over 1 million. When I said invisible citizens, it's people who were not registering their birth, so they were not anywhere, but by putting this, then we're able now to get that and reduce later the birth registration. Amendments into civics and immigration legislation address serious security gaps and improve service delivery, including the vulnerable groups. Our amendments for instance in the immigration front is where now we've come up with the issue of the critical skills and the amendments which now are helping now people to come to our country, and with civics with regards to those issues of management of convenience, we've increased the sentences from 5 to 15 years. Security of birth certificate improved, and front office is able now to print full birth certificate for the first time at the front office. We centralized the adjudication of the hub for permits and visas, that has reduced fraud and corruption and enabled some efficiency gains. Stakeholder forums were formed across the country so that the communities, local government and departments mobilize support for the delivery of DSA services. When I come to the following slides, we'll be demonstrating that. There's been a major IT breakthrough in the design and development of new systems, including the rollout of a smart card. A refurbishment program continued and including transformation of 70 paper-based offices to a fully digital process for IDs and smart card and passport. By end of this financial year, we'll be at 140 offices. Access to institutions to verify identity was expanded, including major agreement signed with the banking sector. Now, if you go to a bank, they can be able, when you open your bank account, to verify whether are you the person who are the holder of that particular ID. And the SASA now and the justice system is starting now to benefit out of that. We implemented and enhanced the movement control system, rolled out to additional ports and capacity strengthened at large force with the focus of the maritime environment. Now, Chair, we are left with 9 ports of entry, which they will be completed in the 2013-14-15 financial year, and then we complete the rollout of the movement control system, which will give us further advantages now in terms of implementing the fingerprint taking at the port of entry. Learning Academy developed and delivered dedicated DSA professional courses and induction, and HRM produced leadership and cadet development and mentoring. Footprint and channels have been expanded in respect of offices, connected health facilities and client service centers. I would now come to those on a graphical way. Chair, we are saying that we started from a reference book during the apartheid era called Dompas, and then we moved to the green ID book, but now in South Africa we're having a smart card, which now we are producing. I'll still come to the numbers. But what is important, Chair, with this, it is to demonstrate that it's not just a smart card, but it is a paperless process. So we have to build this infrastructure where our citizens, when they go to their offices, but we are able now to put that on a check and trace and check on the NPR and harness whether that person who's coming to apply is an authentic person or not, because that writing book is not worth what it is, but a smart card has got these security features. But rather than do that, it also now improves the issue of SMS and people to call up their cards. So, Chair, with the green book, we started from 180 days up to the 54 days. But now, with the smart cards, you are able to apply for a smart card and within a period of about 7 days, you are able to get the smart card back. And, Chair, the issue of the registration of children within 30 days, I think, is very important. But yeah, I might not be interested in this, but the graph, I think the blue line is showing that now in 2009-10, we're only registering 445,853 beds within 30 days, and we're registering 528,083 over 30 days. But now the slide is starting now to change. So now if you look at it now, by 2013-14, we're able now to register 650,682 beds within 30 days. Yes, there's still a challenge that now there's still 435,815 which were registering outside the period. But it is has reduced what we call a late registration of beds. The other line now starts at 174. It's what we're talking about, to say we had people who are not visible. So we embarked on the issue of the registration. We started at about 174,000, but now as at last year, it was only 69,000 people still regarded as registration of birth. Hence, the ministers announced that by December 2015, we want to stop the registration of birth outside those borders where the issues of corruption comes in, because a person who is 25 years comes and say, I've never had any record. So we're starting now to see the fruit of the process. Check with the IDs, as we said, what this graph is also showing is that at 2010-11, we're only able to issue IDs, which are about 60% within 54 days, and the bulk was issued outside. But now by 2013, 91.7% of the IDs are issued within 54 days, and it's only 8.3%. But once now the smart card is fully implemented, then you're going to be getting out of this process altogether. And then with the reissues, for the reissue, first issue, there's a lot of processes which you need to follow. But with the reissue, it means now your fingerprint, your document is already in the system, but it's just that we have lost it. So we are able now with that one, we moved it, was 49 or 2010, but now we're able now to issue 98.2% within 47 days and 1.8% which is outside at the period. But even this chair was saying as well, automating will be moving out of this with the faster process. Passports. Which are working with the LGBTW. I think as a country we pride ourselves with the passport which we have, which is really the state of the art, a passport. So I was saying prior we were not able to, once we implemented the manual capture of passport, that's where now we were having, that people go take photos and then we mix and all that. It's still becoming a challenge. But what is important now is the live capture one. To say now, as a department, we are able now to issue our target for a passport is 13 days because it is taken on a live capture system. So now we are issuing about 95.90% of passports within 13 days. So this is important for us, as we said, one of the items which was signed by the minister of the issue, how do we increase the access of the population into our services? Yes, as a country, we are split into urban and rural. So the blue is the urban. So by 2009-10, 160 offices in the urban areas. But if you look at it, we did not now increase the numbers in the urban areas, but we try with the little money we have to concentrate now on the rural. So we move from 230 now at 242. So when we started as a department prior to 2010, 272 offices, now we're at a margin of 405 offices. And so for our strategy of the restriction of birth within 30 days, one of the vehicles which we are using is the connection of the hospitals. So in 2009-10, we only had 132 hospitals connected. But by 2013-14, we've got about 389 health facilities. That's why now there is an improvement in the restriction of birth within 30 days. But we still need to change the culture, because the parents still go to their facility without an identity document or others, the issues of naming of the children. But it's something which was saying that the vehicle is there, but it's for us now to push the awareness of the people to be able to register the children within 30 days. And so with the office refurbishment, well, the graph shows that we are a little bit going down, but we only took here the ones which we just refurbished. Yes, offices are still a challenge for us. It's coupled with the problems of resources and as well as the issues of our dependency to another department. But in 2013-14, we did refurbish 17. But I want to add that when I was rolling out a smart card, those 70 offices, they also get refurbished. So if you take the 17 plus the 70, we'll refurbish about 87 offices in the current financial year. So you can just say that the old offices of Home Affairs, the other side, and what we have now, so we've got now a corporate image of the department to say, we want one day that when I go to any office in the country, must look the same. So we've got the norms, we've got the standards, it's just at the pace of implementing now that process. As well as another office there, which was at Crane. So with our land ports, it's also important that our infrastructure in some of the ports of entry are just not manageable. However, we are putting a process, because Treasurer gave us an amount of over the 4 year MTSF period of about 400 million. So what we are doing is to go and improve now, we are processing it. If we go now to be last December is when now we implemented this new process where we split the pedestrians, the buses, and the small cars. And that system has worked well, as well as the demonstration bridge, so that we can be able to facilitate people quicker and easily, but in a secure manner. So in the following slide, I'll show what are the numbers we're processing in these processes. So the issue of asylum seeker management is still a challenge. But having said that, there is a downtrend, in terms of the numbers. Because by 2009, we were receiving around about 223,224 asylum seekers in a year. But as of last year, we were around about 78,000. There is a drop. However, the issue is now how many are they become now the recognized refugees at the end? You can see that the margin is too high, to say a lot are not genuine asylum seekers. As you can see that now out of, by 2009, we recognized about 4,679, and then by 2013, it's about 7,289. When I was looking at the last database, we've got about 89,000 refugees who've got status in the country. But it's something which now, if you look on the side of the graph to say, we only have about 12%, but 51% is manifestly unfounded, and 37% are unfounded. So So it's something which is still an issue in the department, which FDM will also talk to it after I finish in terms of what were our issues within the airline and all that. Chairperson, I think it's also important that at this point of interest, when tourism, we're saying tourism is improving in the country, but it has to be processed at the point of entry. Because if our port of entry are not efficient and all that, then we're going to be together. But if you look at the numbers, Oantambo International is the highest port and is followed by Bate Bridge, Limbombo, Maseru Bridge, Fisberg, Osu, Cape Town, Comfort, Golela, and Matlavan. And it goes back to also when we say our tourists are not major coming outside of Africa. Because if you look at a Bate Bridge and all that, you see those numbers. So it also says to us that tourists are even from our continent, and then we get outside. So it is important for us. Let's say the total numbers, you can see that in the quote, that from 2010-11 to 2013-14, numbers adjusted. So then citizens arriving were 4 million, but now we're at 5 million. Departures 4 million, now 5 million. But now the foreign arrivals were 10, but now say we're at 14 million of people arriving to our country. And the departures were 9, and now we're at 13 million. But there's always a question to say, if the arrivals are more than the departures, does it mean now that people are not leaving? Well, in 2 weeks, others, they are arriving because they've got jobs and all that in the country. So they're not going to depart like as a visitor. Whereas, yes, there's still an issue that others might overstay. But that's why we have to put these systems to control that as well. But in our ports now, we are clearly processing about 25 million people per annum. This was the first important to show the slides, to say, with the issue of the permanent residence, that yes, we've got people who are applying for this, so the blue line is what we have received as the people who are applying. But what we grant at the end is not necessarily what has been applied. So at 2013-14, about 39,000 applications, and then we are able to finalize about 19,000 of the permanent residents, as well as the temporary residence permits, which people are coming to the country and how we are performing around that. This was to compare between our permanent residence and temporary residence permits. With the training, as we said, that yes, we've got the challenges in the department around capacity, but we have trained now over the 3 year period 4,900 officials. But in the next slide, just to say, in the 2013-14, we're looking now, we have got a national certificate for home affairs, which has been passed by the SACON. And we have taken people to master training, and then induction course, and then SMS induction, which is the issue which we are talking about. So if now we don't beef up at a leadership level, and then still be sitting with the challenges. So that's what we are also concentrating on. And our issues of IT, because as we automate, we need to train our people on the issues of IT. But the important program for us is the management development and leadership program. Yes, the number is still low, but it's something we want to deal with it. Well, foreign language and home affairs, we have to deal with that, because when people come to our points of entry, they're speaking all different languages, so we must be able, as a department, to help them in their own languages. The issue of fight against fraud and corruption So we elevated a chief director to a branch, and now that branch has been modeled in terms of public anti-corruption strategy, and it has a national footprint, because in each province, though the number is still low, but in each provincial office, we've got the presence of the counter-corruption, and we are participating because we can't fight corruption alone. And we are participating in those structures, and we always take some of our processes in the department and do some baseline around them. And we have approved a conflict of interest policy in the department, and we have appointed an ethics tribunal and established an ethics management committee within the department. In terms of the statistics, we have about 49 workshops to brief our staff, and then the process we have evaluated were 4 investigations, and the total of 627 investigations, of which 180 were referred for disciplinary action, 497 couldn't get an evidence to take the process forward. And also, Chair, there are officials which are arrested in the department. So 40 officials have been arrested, but we're still following the criminal procedures around that. And we make sure that we communicate to the department so that it also people must know that if I do something wrong, and then I can be, if I caught, I'll be dealt with it. Well, the issue of vetting is not moving at the pace which we want, because there's a dependence of the department. We don't have a full mandate of vetting, but we can do a vetting process at a particular level, and we have to transfer it to state security, and we do the security evaluations. With the HRs, and it's important for us to say, yes, as of 2010-11, we had about the staff establishment of about 9,259 people. Though there it was inclusive of temporary workers, which have come back on until they came over, and then they had to work on that. So now we are at about 9,644. But what is important with it is that at the SMS level, we only have managers, that is from the director up, we are only 102, but for now we are at 178, which gives us an opportunity to change the department, because now there are managers. And then as well, we looked at that level of level 9 to 12, because level 9 to 12 is more those people who are the heads of our offices. So small offices at level 9, and then the larger ones are at a level of the deputy director. So we also look at that too, to look at that rate. And Chair, the vacancy rate is still a challenge in the department, but we are trying to work hard on this. So as of last year, we had 4% of the 6.6% of the vacancy rate in the department. Then the turnover, which is also a concern for us to say, yes, that turnover in 2010-11, which was 32%, is because they had to replace the contract workers. And say, in Home Affairs, as a citrus department, is problematic to work with people who are on a contract, so they have to get permanent people, but with the resources we have, we could not absorb everyone. So that's why I have that high turnover rate. But if you look at it now, going down is something which we are manageable. So it gives us some edge to say if our staff are remaining with us, then with the changes we
by 45.88% in the previous year, we really were close, and then now again a drop, but something which we are paying attention to as a department. So I say out of that 170 managers, 5.88% of it is financing. So the issue of disability is something which we are also mindful of it as a department, that we should get 2%. So we sit in a year and dedicate certain positions that now each branch must be able to say to us, this post I'm targeting it to appoint a person with disabilities. So we are still at 1.3%, we are not yet where we want. Disciplinary cases is still a challenge, which in terms of achieving it, but we are really making sure that through those corruption cases, they must come through the disciplinary processes. But there is a reduction here and there of that, but maybe what I'm saying is based now on this awareness which are put into the department so that people can know what is right and what is wrong. So in terms of the employment equity status for the department, I was that staff complement of 9,664. Africans are still at 86% as against the national target of 79%. And then colors were at 5.75 as against 8.9. And then Indians were at 0.8 as against 2.5. And then white at 6.85 as against 9.6. So it's something which we are monitoring, because we know where we need to get to as a department. We are not able to achieve those targets, but it's something which we are working on. As I'm saying now, on disability, we are still at 1.3 instead of 2%. But the following slide is what I've already explained to say. What is the split between female and male, and then now how I was splitting at the SMS level, so for 92 managers, whereas males and 78, which are females, but we know that we have to go to the 50-50. So it is to come now to the 2013-14 annual performance. In the previous year, as a department, we achieved 25% of our targets, and 41% were partially achieved and 33% not achieved. But at that point, our partially achieved, we put it between 41 and 99%. But this year, we really focused and tried and pushed on the issue of targets. So we've achieved 52.6%. But now on the partial, we increased the bar, which is 81 to 99%, which is 10.5, and then what has not been achieved is 36.8. But in the following slides, we are splitting that program and say on program one, with 14 targets, of which 7 have been achieved, and 1 partially achieved, and 6 not achieved. And then now outcome two, we've put achieved 10, and with 10 targets and 7 achieved and 3% achieved. And then now on outcome 3, 14 and 6 and 8. So we have 38 targets of which 20 have been achieved, 4% achieved and 14 not achieved. So I'm not going to repeat, because these are the ones which are in the annual report in terms of what we achieved and what not, until I come to the finance ones, exactly what is in the annual report. But what I will just pick up is the ones where we say they are partially achieved, to say payments within 30 days have to achieve 100%, but we managed to pay 85.81%, so there's still a percentage which was not paid within 30 days. And then on the IDs, our target was 95 and we achieved 91.7. And then on machine to get the passport, the target was 95%, we achieved 92.7. And also on the machine
the end of the day. And of course now DCOM collects the revenue, and then after they've collected it, then we get the documents from DCOM, and then we recognize that revenue based on the documents which we have collected from DCOM. But there was a question which was asked by the Auditor General, which we accepted it, to say, what assurance do we have now as a department that the figures which are given to us by DCOM is the total revenue which they have collected? So it means we need to have a dual type of a system whereby now emissions must report directly to us on what they have collected as emission. And then after that, DCOM must submit the documents, and then we have to compare first between what DCOM is given to us and what emission is given to us. But that process we did not have of the dual. That's why then it caused the problem of saying, how as an auditor general, I ensure that the total revenue which you are reporting is the total revenue which has been collected. So that is the issue. Secondly, the issue was on this fines. What fines means is that when a person overstayed in the country, and then based on that, then that person will be fined, he must pay a fine. But our system, which could not implement it like that, will let you to go out of the country, because I can't stop you in a port of entry before you leave and say, pay me. What if that person does not have money? Then it creates further problems of shelter, of all those problems. But the people now leave, and then I'm left to come back. What is the challenge? The challenge is that today I will come here as a Muslim applying with this passport. But tomorrow I'm coming as somebody else. Because I don't have a system which is tracking that properly. And the compound problem was also that we have got ports of entry which are using the new movement control system. I've got ports of entry which are using the old. So what it means, I can be fined through Bay Bridge, but I come back through Fitzbeck. I'm the same person, I didn't change anything. So my fine is remaining there, but I'm able to come back to the country. Then those were the challenges which also again looking at the changes which we had. We no longer now have a fine. If now you come to the country, you overstay, is what we've been debating. You will be declared as an undesirable, because the fine was not working for us. As we saw it here. So in the financial statements of this year, that figure is at zero. However, AGF to satisfy themselves that this thing which you are writing it off, is it a complete figure? It has been difficult to say in all probabilities it is. Whether somebody can come from this way, can come that way. But that figure now is a zero. So I don't have fines going forward. Then the repatriation. Repatriation is when our people are paying a deposit.
challenging aspect of our work. And we certainly are open to any suggestions and observations, particularly on the portfolio committee, which to which we report. And in your oversight work in this regard, clearly you would have recommendations, which as we are trying to improve and implement processes in line with the Human Rights Commission's report, I think we would find very useful as well. So in this regard, there were two suggestions that we wanted to make. Instead of us at this limited time addressing that matter now, that perhaps what we should request is an opportunity to brief the portfolio committee in a special meeting, and perhaps the portfolio committee would also wish to invite the Human Rights Commission to address you in this regard. And it may also be an idea for the portfolio committee to undertake an oversight visit to the Mandela repatriation sector to understand firsthand the challenges that that we face. In this regard, let me just say that our response to the Human Rights Commission's report is an ongoing one, where we actually have been cooperating quite well between the two institutions, and really there are mechanisms that we are putting in place to give expression to some of their recommendations. Of course, not all of their recommendations can be immediately implemented, because some of them have huge budgetary consequences and implications. But those that we are able to, we have proceeded along that trajectory. So I just think overall this issue is far too important for us to just deal with in a short space of time, and perhaps if you would be so kind as to accede to our request, we'll certainly make ourselves available to the committee for these future engagements. Thank you, Chair.
Let us thank the presentation and the input that the Deputy Minister has made, and also to appreciate the efforts that the Department is taking to address those issues that you can deal with in relation to the Mandela Human Rights Report, in relation to the Auditor General's recommendations. And of course, as well, the efforts that you are making in order to work together with Treasury on things that you are able to agree on, and as well as the Auditor has been painting a black picture over the Department for quite a long time in terms of those fees and funds. I think as a committee, we need to encourage you to have that working relationship with those that affect your work, and do as much as you can to really move towards a situation where everybody can be happy, that you move towards the green audit and higher service delivery levels. I think we need to really do that, and also really appreciate this programmatic action now to engage the Auditor General. He said on the 22nd that you'll be engaging them. I think we can only expect the best from such an engagement. And of course, we do also understand that the training, now you've got a person in charge of that, then that makes life a lot more easier on some of your staff to actually know the basics, to ensure that we don't cry about things that we're not supposed to cry about.
think that would be about there is limit about 20 persons. Because now the IEC has served its time as well, and then the shorten our lunch time a bit, have lunch for about 30 minutes and then go on.
Yes. Honorable Senator, you have an agreement? No problem. Honorable Speaker. Okay, I agree to. Then we'll proceed. And, okay, the Nisi Hussein, and then Kane. And then five is Kumari. Is that all the honorable Nisi?
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the department for the report. Chair, as a member of this committee, I would like to register my disappointment on the outcome that we received today. At this time of our democracy, we have to check. We are expecting better results from all the departments and the entities, especially this department. I was expecting an improved audit outcome, that is a clean audit report. Here in Chair, we are not happy. On the HS report, Chairperson, checking on status of key commitments by the minister. The mention is made of improving the relationship between the DICO and the DHA to ensure better quality of information on the vouchers from the foreign mission. I think, Chairperson, that should go a long way and assist us in this problem of people, because we cannot allow this to be reported as a challenge in each and every financial year. Chair. I think these tedious processes involved with people should be resolved. My other question, Chair, is on page 3. You've made mention of the fact that the difference between data from foreign nationals arriving and departing in South Africa decreased to 8.5%, which is 1.2 million, and in 2013-14, from previous more arrivals than departures in 2012-13. Chair, what accounts for the decline in the immigration as measured by the department being less than the arrivals, and declining from 13%, that is the 1.8 million in 2012-13, that is 8.5%, that is after several years of growth? That is my question. Given the age's indication of a significant lack of necessary audit evidence, how can the department itself be certain that the performance indicators in reports on are accurate? And the improved operation in the Bainbridge port check of entry are noted with appreciation, and I just want to check if there are still any plans for the implementation of a one-stop border at this port. I would like to know, Chair, what has been done to improve the service delivery improvement plan
after corruption and achievement are noted with appreciation. Chair. Given the consistent difficulty of the department in achieving a clean audit, how are the relevant officials being held accountable for that? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Chair, thank you very much. Let me firstly say that I am encouraged by the words of the Deputy Minister. It's good to see the Deputy Minister here today so that we can engage with. And I want to support the view that she's expressed of having an in-depth discussion around Mandela. I think it's a matter of serious concern. And I'll make more comments at the time when we do have that engagement. But I think that I agree with the Deputy Minister that we must put it high up on the agenda. Let's have the conversation of what is actually going on there. It just can't be right that many of those people who are being treated like animals, and I'm unfortunate to say that, are some of those people who stood side by side with us in the freedom for democracy in South Africa. But we must also float the role that the SASA has to play in this. But let's deal with it at the time when the item is on the agenda. Chair, as usual, I want to start by giving credit to the department. Because let's be fair and let's recognize that there has been some huge advances made on a number of outcomes in the report as well as the presentation that the DG had put up on the screen not too long ago. And the fact is that we've made some huge advances with IDs and costs. And our turnaround times over the years has been fabulous. And the feedback that I get from the ground from people is many of them can't actually believe that they get their IDs and their passports in such a good turnaround time. So, and that's a positive thing. We must put that on record and encourage more and more South Africans to support the department because I think it's doing a fabulous job. There are a number of other positive outcomes. So the fact that you've been able to reduce the irregular expenditure by that massive, I think it's all positive. And granted, to move from a 26% to a 53% is progress. But you know, it might have came on with a report of 26% and then got to 53% the following year. I'll be happy, but I won't be excited. And let's deal with that part. And while we're on the subject of excitement, Chair, when I read this report, it reminded me of a teenage love story. That in the beginning you're all excited, and as you work through that relationship, it gets more and more heartbreaking as you get to the end. And when you get to the Auditor General's report, you're not sure whether it's a sad story or it's a horror story. And I'm encouraged by the comments that the Minister has made in his foreword because he also touches on horror stories. So maybe he's going to spend some time on the horror stories in the AG's report. Let me start there, Chair, on the issue of the performance. You know, I think that when we sit here and we analyze these things and talk, we can understand on some occasions the difficulties and the challenges the department faces. But when you simplify this whole thing, and when you go out there to the public and you say to them that the Department of Home Affairs only achieved half of what it set out to do, then the impression of the department is not good. And then you have to argue that all of these people who work for the Home Affairs Department were paid a full salary for doing half of what they were expected. And these are targets that weren't set in the apartheid era, so you can't blame it on apartheid. These were targets that we set, that you knew they were achievable, and yet you only achieve half of them. And so the follow-up to that must be, is that what accountability will there be? Because year on year on year, the department comes and gives this report about what was achieved and what was not achieved. And then, before you want to play, you've all forgotten. And then the next year, the same thing happens, and it goes on and on. So there isn't a sense of genuine accountability for the lack of performance in the department. And let's give credit for the fact that there has been some level of progress. But I'm not so sure that's enough. And I'm not so sure that's what people out there are expecting from the department. So let me come to the second point that I want to say. And that is, for me, that stuck out a lot, and that is the contingent liability of 1.4 billion rand. If I understand that correctly, it means that you set aside an amount of about 1.4 billion rand to take care of legal matters. And when I looked at the total budget of the department of close to 6.5 billion, we actually figured out that about 20% of it is what we're keeping aside for legal matters. And that's the one way for me of getting an indication when there is declining service level standards. Because it means that the worse the levels get, the more people run off to court, and the more the department has to keep money in order because they're going to have to deal with those court cases. And I remember in a recent reply that I put to the minister, and from a comparative analysis of the amount of money that we're spending on legal fees over the last few financial years, it's skyrocketing. It's getting out of hand. And one of those reasons is the Lindella repatriation matter because of all the shenanigans that's going on there. So if we're spending, if the government is keeping 21%, and unless I'm incorrect, that's my reason behind it, unless I'm incorrect, for us to be spending 20% of our money and keeping aside for contingent liabilities means that there's less money for the service delivery. And then I don't have to go into the detail about, which we all know about, is how much more of an investment that we have to make into immigration services. And that money could have much better been spent to solve a lot of those problems of people coming to the border than we can't trace. So the money is not there. It's just that it's been spent in the wrong way. And if we can get the culture right, and this culture of impunity that I think exists to some extent, if we get that right, then I think a lot of our problems will disappear. The thing that really breaks our hearts is when you see that the department is transgressed and has received an absolute disclaimer, and here I come to the issue of cultural opportunity. Because the department that can't produce the evidence of the work it does tells me that something is seriously wrong. And I specifically asked the agent in question earlier about the sample audit. Because it tells you that they've only conducted a sample, which means the problem, in my view, is much bigger than what we think it is as it appears to be. And I'm referring to the financial business. Chair, I want to come to the next question on this. Is it Kodishin or Kodishin, the company that was paid 5.5 million rand for adult basic education? I picked it up in the report. And the two questions that I want to ask is why are we, the Department of Home Affairs, involved in adult basic education? I think that would be more the Department of Education. So. But the more important question is, just how do you pay a company 5.5 million rand and just how afterwards they didn't do the job? You know, it's like you pay a village to build your house 5 million rand and you go away and you come back and you see no house. But you've got no money either because you paid the guy long before you had built it. So unless there's a basic valid explanation for it, it just, to me, it just boggles my mind how we could actually pay a company 5.5 million rand for something that they actually didn't do. And then discovered it afterwards that we now have to run them to court to get that money back. And then the issue about hallmark, the report doesn't give the detail. It only says that the public protector is investigating the lease of the hallmark building. God forbid, I hope we don't end up with another type of a flock scandal soon. But it's really interesting to see what the response is. The Director General mentioned earlier about the issue about asset register, and I get it, it was to me a bit confusing. But I just want to ask the very clear questions, and which is this. Is there a proper asset register? Is there proper movement control of assets? And do we know where all the assets are? I want to respond to the comment on the issue of the undesirable status in relation to the visa regulations. So the issue for me is not the principle. I completely agree with the principle. And I said it over and over and over again, and the department still doesn't get it. The issue is that we are giving innocent people undesirable statuses. That's the issue. And please, DG, through you, Jay, I'm happy to engage with you on it, put those examples on the table. You know, on the previous occasion, I gave credit to Mr. McKay's department and the response that we were getting, the positive response. I want to withdraw that now, because the response has been missed. jobs and businesses are closing. The response we got from the department that is not true. Well, I'll give you one classic example, and that is, and I brought this to the attention of the DDG of Immigration on the 2nd of September. It's about more than a month and a half now, and I get one line of responses that they're dealing with it. But within 1.5 months, that company is now closing down because they've lost more than 5 million rand in revenue from students who are supposed to come and study here who can't get their visas. We send follow-up emails to Mr. McKay. We get a one-liner response that we're dealing with it. And in the meantime, businesses are suffering and they're losing revenue. And please, for God's sake, Chair, I'm asking you that if the department can take these things more seriously when we raise it with them, it will solve a lot of problems. There are occasions when we want to work with the department and assist them to fix these things, but to have turned an absolute blind eye and not deal with these matters on an urgent basis when it's urgent, it just doesn't make sense to me. I can understand that if there's some things that are not urgent and you have other priorities. But in such instances where we know that a business is closing down, when the owner of the company wrote a heartfelt letter pleading with the minister saying, please help me, this company is going to close down. I cannot get visas for students to come and study here. We're not getting money. I copied that to the department. I get one line response. In fact, since then I never got a response. And I've now reached the point of where I want to ask for one, which is why I'm raising the chair to follow. Chair, I'll stop there because I know that you want to go into break and perhaps maybe afterwards raise a few other points.
Okay, thanks for leaving some for Honorable Flint.
Thank you very much, Chair. I wasn't going to ask any questions, but thank you for leaving some for actually, I just want to comment that the department has taken the action there on behalf of the AG. Because I see there is a comment on the high level audit action that leads to that, that you're going to rectify the NGOs spoken about. Now, I just want to go to program on the administration, 3.1.1.1, where you newly appointed 600 and achieved 667. And then what I want to find out there, what about the total budget? Did you overspend or you didn't overspend? And what was the nature of the courses that was taken out? On the page, and then if you look at 3.1.2.1, what happened to the 10th of the 43? I also have 129, not 133. What was the total budget spent? The third question that I want to ask, it's not a question anyway, because it's a concern about corruption 3.2.1.2. I see not achieved. I note the progress that worries about slow pace in achieving this, the corruption issue. Because combating corruption is the key in managing this department. So it really raises a concern. And then on 3.2.1.3, it talks about policies. I just want to know which policy in this is supposed to be achieved. Then I want to also congratulate the Deputy Minister on this nice picture.
It really becomes very difficult for us to follow the question if we don't know what you're referring to. So if you could just, instead of just saying 3.1, just tell us which documents and so that we can follow precisely what page and so on. You said 148.
I think it's on the annual report.
Yes, it's on
of the department. And then just mentioned the
page 148.4. Where the AG has pointed out the department revenue stated whatever, and then it was covered when the DG was doing a presentation on the high level audit action that is going to be taken by the department. We
like to take you. According to AIDS report on these areas, only non-compliance with legislation intervention is needed, therefore, for effective leadership. I'm worried because the age also talks, the aging report also talks to constant digital situation being watched, and also say that on the outcome, 3.3. What are the measures taken in this regard? And secondly, a concern about the key officials on lack of appropriate competences causing a regression. Now, I don't see you talking strictly about all your training. It is not clear about the finances specifically. The finances are just only, yes, I understand there is, you talk about the finances training on the issue of IT, but I think because of this problem we have settled about this disclaimer and this qualified reports. Now, how can I think what a specific training strategy for financing alone? So that you have picked, because if you are talking about the green audit, or if you are talking about the unqualified audit reports, which you don't even have, you have only qualified reports on the past. So, can you have now a specific training strategy for the finances? And then also the agency report talks to lack of necessary audit evidence. How can the department be certain that reports are
thank you very much, Honorable Kwere.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I'd like to ask questions or comment around two issues. The first being Lindela, and then the second says that whenever there is misconduct, there has to be consequences. So it's the responsibility of the Auditor General to give us the audit report and say it's a disclaimer. But I think if we've got to get from the department what corrective action has been taken, if any, and what plans are there, and then whether control mechanisms, control systems, like the internal audit, having the internal audit in place, like having the audit committee in place, like having a competent chief financial officer are there, and going together with what is happening. Because now, if the chief financial officer has not been there for a lengthy period, as we are having here from the department, we've got to take a picture to what then have they done to make sure that there is a competent, there is competency in that aspect of delivery. And then lastly, we've got their plan. It's not enough to say that they are taking correction. What are the plans? Have you provided the mandate for the plans? Have you provided the resources for the plans? Have you provided the capacities for the plans? Because surely these things do not happen at a higher level. It happens with plans then, players who are not having systems to work with, and so forth. So I think as we go forward as a nation, we need to take care of this. And lastly, I support this issue of pressing. Maybe slow, but we cannot afford to have people in such a department like Home Affairs who have not been vetted, and yet they issue passports, they issue IDs, which could be abused by criminals. And therefore, we've got to know who is working at the Department of Home Affairs. It could be a cleaner, it could be anyone, but anyone can commit a crime there. And then we've got to know that this person is not a fraudster, not a thief. This person is not is loyal to their country and so on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable members. The issue of Lindela, I think when it was a court ruling about Lindela, it promised that we will engage the department. And under that from the department, how they respond to that court ruling. And of course, now after that, we've got some sort of a report that has been branched out about Lindela and what happens inside. And therefore, it becomes much more important that we need to identify a date where the Human Rights Commission can come and the department can come, and also talk to a particular court and how they see what is inside there and how we move forward. I think that is the duty that we have now after the Deputy Minister has made the proposal. We need to find a space. But honorable members must not forget that we have already agreed on the program for this particular term, which means we will have to really force it if we have to do it within this particular term, and find a space somewhere where we must actually force it in. Or we go for a special meeting which those members that are also participating in other committees then must commit to attend to that specific one if we made a special meeting. We shouldn't make a special meeting only to find that we are three only, and then that doesn't achieve anything. Members, I'm sure, will remember that at one time when we